Two talks. He just gave one last week. We're posting the full talk online at democracynow.org. But this Friday, Juan Gonzalez is giving one of his final farewell talks at the CUNY School of Labor and Urban Studies at 3 p.m., speaking about 50 years of defending and chronicling America's workers. That's Friday at 3. Monday at 6:30, he'll give an address on Latinos, race, and empire at the CUNY Graduate Center. Go to democracynow.org for all the details. Juan, I can't wait to see you there in person. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
When I first came to Brookhaven Town, way, hey, 90.1, there was no good music to be heard around. Way, hey, 90.1. Then one day I turned on the dial. Way, hey, 90.1. There I found music to make me smile. Way, hey, 90.1. I waited for a legal ID. Way, hey, 90.1. The DJ said WUSB. Way, hey, 90.1. They start each day with the rising sun. Way, hey, 90.1. Don't ever finish till after the day is done. Way, hey, 90.1. So if you want good music to hear. Way, hey, 90.1. There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear. Way, hey, 90.1. So if you like the sounds, do take a look. Way, hey, 90.1. At WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook, where it's just about 6 o'clock. It's time once again for Off the Wall. to go here.
I am.
Okay. Sorry for the delay. We've been adjusting things here.
Yeah, I feel adjusted.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot going on.
Well adjusted.
A lot of levels good now?
They're terrific. Okay, they're superb.
We're working with some new equipment and readjusting things, and every corner we turn, there's another technical issue.
In trying to fix something, I accidentally pressed the solo button on a channel that was zero.
I don't know what that
so
means.
So I couldn't monitor anything that was going on, and it was terrifically confusing.
I'm just going to ask one question, then I'm going to drop it. What is a solo button for?
Oh, it's like you mute all the other channels except for the one that you're choosing or the ones that are selected for it.
Okay.
But the way it was configured, it was only going to the monitor. So you would solo that channel, and you would only hear the channels that were pressed.
It sounds like
there was nothing on it. I could hear a little bit of bleeding in the background, but I couldn't...
Bleeding, by the way, folks, output. Is an audio term.
Yeah, like it going out. So there was audio, and it was, in fact, a news program.
If you hear something in the background that shouldn't be there, that's part of a different audio source, that's known as bleeding.
Bleeding or like crosstalk. I don't know. Anyway, so technically we're broadcasting from WUSB Stony Brook.
What do you mean technically? We are broadcasting from WUSB Stony Brook. You say it like, you know, we're sort of
well, we're technically
getting
speaking.
Away with it somehow.
We're technically speaking, you know.
We always are technically speaking. In fact, that should be the name of the show, is technically speaking. Wouldn't that be a good name?
Off the Wall.
I don't know why we're called Off the Wall. Technically speaking, it's always what I wanted, and no one ever seems to take that seriously. All right, well, here we are on a Tuesday evening. We have a couple of challenges here. I mentioned the technical challenges. Another technical challenge, too, because the facility that we're in right now allegedly has a fiber connection to the Internet. But I just did a speed test in the other room, and instead of getting a 1 gig connection, we're getting a whopping 9 megabit. So maybe somebody could look into that, because that sure doesn't seem right. That's like slower than copper wire. That's slower than coax.
It's a lot of people trying to get things done.
Slower than semaphore. Come on, we can do better than that. But I don't think it's going to affect our air quality. I think that is just going to remain poor as always. I don't think the bandwidth is going to. But we should be getting much higher bandwidth.
Yes, let's unclog the internet.
That's my point. I don't want to complain the whole hour, but I just think that, you know, you should get what you pay for, right? Yeah, makes sense.
It's in the consumer's interest.
So yeah, we might be choppy. We might be a little broken up. We might be a little, you know, flaky or artifacty. It's not our fault. Nothing ever is our fault. Where'd the intro go? Oh, I guess we ran out of intro. All right, well, so we have that. We also are kind of limited in how we can look at news sources right now. Because we're in the middle of watching the World Cup, and literally in the middle, meaning there are two games today, and we know what happened in one of them, and we don't know what happened in the other one, and we don't want to know what happened in the other one until we get to see it. So for those of you who might be in a similar predicament, pay attention, because we are going to ruin one game, but we're not going to ruin the other one because, well, we don't know what happened in the other one. And you can't ruin it for us either, because we're not taking phone calls. So there's really not much of a way that you can spoil the game for us, which we're going to watch as soon as we get off the air. But the first game, yes, we are going to ruin this. The first game was between Spain and Morocco. And this is a round of 16, knockout stage. Winner goes to the quarterfinals. You know, this has been a tournament of so many upsets. Seeing Japan beat Germany. Japan beat Spain. Japan finished first in their group, I believe. We saw South Korea do really well. We've seen Morocco win their group. You know, we just all kinds of upsets, which I love. I love seeing new countries in football emerge and become dominant. What Croatia has done is simply incredible. And they're heading to the quarterfinals again. Which is really pretty amazing. I want to see more parts of the world involved as well, not just Europe and South America. And that's why today's game was particularly interesting and important when Spain faced off against a really strong Moroccan team. I don't believe they've ever made it to the quarterfinals. Someone correct me if I'm wrong. Anyway, we just finished watching that game before it it ended scoreless, so they had to go two 15-minute periods of overtime. Doesn't matter if you score in either one of those periods. They play the whole 30 minutes, 15 minutes each. And at the end of that 30 minutes, they were still scoreless, so then they had to resolve it in the way that it's really tense, but it doesn't seem fair, penalty kicks. And Spain somehow missed their first three penalty kicks. I've never seen that before. And there's really no coming back from that, and there wasn't. And tonight in Morocco, I can only imagine the celebrations that are going on. This is history. This is something that is unprecedented in World Cup history, and that's what you want to see. You want to see the history made. You don't want to see Brazil win every time or Germany win every time. And Germany's not going to win because they got sent home. This is what makes it interesting. And yeah, you know, we have to look past all the controversies. I mean, we want to focus on the controversies of Qatar and just the corruption of FIFA and all that. But we also want to see the game being played. So when the game is played, we want to focus on that. And good game today, I got to say. Morocco really, they staved off Spain amazingly. Their offense wasn't great, but their defense was incredible.
And in so many ways that hitting the goalpost over and over again throughout the game,
oh boy,
it was just like a lesson in physics and geometry and lucky misalignments of shots and just the way they went. It was so to me those were the most exciting points during the rest of it. I mean, there was a lot of challenge and stuff along the way, but I didn't really, you weren't as captivated because the points weren't going up, and you know that adds to the tension. So here you are with no points on the board, and you go into this shooting thing, and wow, Spain did not have it. You either have it in that moment, and it just that itself spoke to a lot of the gameplay where there were these shots that would just like hit the outline of the goalposts.
Mm-hmm.
Here it was again, a team basically facing off, and it was just a metaphor for the whole game, like just how difficult it was to get to the back of the net. You know
what I love seeing right before the penalty shots was the image of the two goaltenders just basically arm in arm, just really really close and supportive of each other, even though they're on opposite teams. And you know, in the regular season, they might not be on opposite teams; they might be on the same team. They probably aren't, but there's all kinds of different circumstances where you can meet. So in this particular case, they were about to not face off directly, but take those penalty kicks and made a better man win, et cetera, et cetera. It's just good to see the good sportsmanship. It's always really cool to see that. And you see it in so many different ways. There was one instance, I think it was the guy who scored last for Ghana, who really made it pretty far as well. And when he scored, he got so exuberant, he took his shirt off. You take your shirt off to celebrate, which, you know, many people do. But when you do that in a football game, soccer game, you get yellow carded for over-celebration. That's what it's called.
So, not allowed.
Over-celebration. And the thing is, it was at the end of the game. Didn't really matter. But it was his second yellow card of the game. When you have two yellow cards, that adds up to a red card, meaning you're ejected from the game, and you don't get replaced. Your team has to play one man down from that point on. So just by taking his shirt off, he got that yellow card, added to the other yellow card, red card, got kicked out of the game. But seeing that happen, you know, they knew they weren't going to go ahead anyway. Just scoring the goal was celebration enough. But the referee was laughing at the same time, and you know, congratulating the guy as he was kicking him out of the game.
He knows they can't help it in the moment.
No,
it's such an important thing to them.
These are the rules. The player respected the rules. It was a funny situation, and just kind of a unique thing to see. What I like is I like the fact that these games are being broadcast on Channel 5 in New York, I guess the Fox network throughout the country, broadcast TV. So a lot of people probably are turning it on and just seeing all these superstars from all around the world that they've probably never heard of before. And, you know, in that moment, you realize, wow, know, the Super Bowl is something, the World Series is something, but this is so much bigger and so much more encompassing. And I just think it might open up a whole lot of eyes. And I also get that feeling, you know, whenever a team, a country that hasn't won before, hasn't advanced before, really, you know, gets somewhere and inspires all their kids to pursue this sport. Like, you know, Japan, for instance, they co-hosted, I believe it was 2002 with South Korea, and both of the teams made it into the round of 16. They have really built up their program in the years since then, and they've gotten quite good. Japan is really good, you know? They almost beat Croatia, and Croatia is really good, too. We've seen them, you know, really move forward in the years that their country has existed since breaking from Yugoslavia. It's a fascinating thing to watch for all the international intrigue and the sportsmanship that is just, you know, it's the language that they all speak. I mean, you could have a team from North Korea play a team from Latvia, and they all speak the same language. They all play by the same rules. They all know what to do, what not to do, how to exaggerate, how to get away with things. And that's something that we don't have in day-to-day life, but football does have that. So that's why I think it was Kofi Annan of the United Nations who expressed envy that there were more teams in FIFA, the International Football Association, than there were countries in the United Nations, and, of course, each team representing a country. So, yeah, it's something that only happens every 4 years, so it's kind of cool to pay attention to it. Now, we don't know what happened with Portugal and Switzerland. That was the other game today. Got to say, not a big Ronaldo fan. You know, there are certain players that I really do like. I don't know a lot about them, but I just see how they present themselves. I really like Lionel Messi from Argentina. I like the guy from Croatia whose name I can never remember. They just seem like good people. Ronaldo, not so much. He seems like an entitled jerk. I'm sorry, but that's how I feel. But every country seems to have this one star, this one person that they're always looking at and saying, is this guy going to score? Is this guy, is this his last World Cup, et cetera, et cetera? And, you know, in Ronaldo's case, Portugal's playing Switzerland, kind of rooting for Switzerland, just to see him have a bad day. Of course, he probably didn't have a bad day. He probably, you know, scored all kinds of goals. The thing that gets me is that whenever there's a penalty, they give it to Ronaldo, and then he gets credit for the goal scored. Even though he didn't really score a goal, he scored a penalty, which almost anybody can score a penalty. He's good. I'm not saying he's not good, but
it's not, like, the same level as, like, passing or...
He's good at that, too. He's a very good player. There's no question about that. But I just think people elevate him a little too much, and it really gets to his head. But now, what has happened, and I'm not going to talk the whole hour about sports. It's just you can see how you kind of get into it just following these things for a moment. He has basically split from he was with Manchester United. He's been bouncing around from team to team because, I don't know, I guess he's somewhat difficult. And now he basically left them in the middle of the season. And yesterday it was announced that he's going to a team in Saudi Arabia, and he's making something like $225 million a year. Yeah, to kick a ball around and be Ronaldo, which is nothing pleasant, believe me. So I just wonder, are we ever going to see this guy again? He's playing in a Saudi Arabian league. You know, they don't exactly make the rounds that much. Is something going to change here? I don't believe Saudi Arabia qualifies for Champions League or Europa League. They're not in Europe, right? So what exactly is going to happen here? We're going to see him when Saudi Arabia makes the next World Cup appearance in 4 years? When else will we see him? I'm not complaining, just pointing out that this is kind of weird. What is Saudi Arabia up to that they pay this much money for one guy? You know, we were talking about this yesterday. Yeah, you can build up a team. You can have all these superstars. But you need another team to play. So what are they going to do exactly? Not berating the Saudi Arabian, you know, Football Association, whatever they're called. But, you know, and they did quite well, actually, in this World Cup. No question about that. But how much else is there?
it's a huge, hugely, a huge and costly attempt at maybe getting an anchor player for a regional league that it may emerge as a result of maybe perhaps the proximity of this particular World Cup.
I just don't see a whole lot of football fans in Saudi Arabia like I see tonight in Morocco. I might be wrong. Maybe there really are a lot. I see it more as something that the regime is trying to build up and pumping money into it like this. But I question how much of an effect it's going to have to reward one person. You equated it to that that rival golf league that has popped up, that Saudi Arabian golf league.
LIV.
I don't know what it's called. But
Live or Live.
Yeah, people are jumping to that. And it's not seen as a good thing to do because, you know, it is a brutal regime. It's, you know, built on all kinds of corruption and money everywhere.
Or that other, what was it, like the Ultra Champions League or something?
Oh, yeah.
What was that one that where a bunch of people got in trouble because they were going to split or, like, in this, like, coalition?
Basically, it was a Super League.
Super League.
They were going to form a Super League of the super teams.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have your Manchester United, you have your Manchester City, your Liverpool, and you know, basically just have maybe 12, 15 teams just play each other all season long instead of playing, you know, a couple of dozen teams. And also having the ability to be relegated, meaning you have a bad season, you go down a division where there's 22 other teams that you can play. And consequentially, those teams down there, if they have a great season, they move up to the first division. And there's divisions going all the way down to, I think, 15 divisions. It's incredible. We don't have that in this country. I wish we did. But the Super League was going to supplant that and just make it somehow only the superstars. I mean, they thought it would appeal to the fans, and maybe in this country it would appeal to the fans, but in Europe, no, it didn't. The fans revolted, and they held the owners accountable, and practically held trials in the stadium against them. It was beautiful to see. The Super League was completely decimated, and owners learned a thing or two about how much fans care about football and what they will do to defend its integrity. And, you know, it's something we don't understand here in this country, because here every team is a business. It's a financial investment. And if it doesn't do well, it gets transferred someplace else. Transferred someplace else. Think about that. You know, the New York Giants could become, oh, I don't know, the San Francisco Giants, or the Brooklyn Dodgers could become the Los Angeles Dodgers. You know, crazy scenarios like that where, yeah, how can a team actually go from one place to another? In Europe, they have no conception of that. In England, they have no conception of that. They have a conception of it, but it happens so incredibly rarely. It's basically every team is a part of the town that they are in. It's like, I don't know what to compare it to, because nothing sticks around in towns here. But imagine, okay, the post office. I guess that's the only thing I can point to. It doesn't move. Although, you know, literally, the Port Jefferson Station post office has lost its lease. I don't know what they're going to do. But generally, post offices stay in the town that they're supposed to be in. You know, if you found out your local post office is now in Florida, that would be kind of weird, don't you think? Well, they feel the same way about their teams because the teams are a part of the community. And they're not just a business to make money off of. And yeah, if your team sucks, it goes down a division. It goes down another division if it continues to do badly. And that's just, you know, okay, I'll put you in a bad mood, but the team isn't going to go anywhere. And whereas if a team continues to get really good, then all of a sudden you have a big stadium being built in your town and, you know, everyone's lives change. So that is the difference between how these organized sports are viewed in different places rather than here.
Yeah, it doesn't really these investment schemes don't really honor the tradition and the way that what the communities that are established that have an audience and an allegiance come to expect, and it can be incredibly disruptive and backfire. That's distinct from development, and I think one of FIFA's I guess the subtext is that, you know, they bring this game and all the sort of virtues and positive attributes that come with the game, the spectatorship and industry around it to parts of the world that don't have that. But I think it's a fine line, and the existing leagues often have come up, however organized or traditional, and had a lot to build up and sacrifice for it to exist. So, and that I think goes for any of these things. So when you create these private divisions and super things that are purely investment schemes and just huge infusions of money and capital, they can become just hugely short-sighted and not honor the spirit of that. And
exactly.
And it's so plain to those loyal fans and so forth that would take issue and say, like, no, you know, this is how we handle it. We're resilient. We're built for sort of hardship, you know, however the team fares, and to exist wherever we place over time. And that can be lost on the people that try to create these other division or leagues. And to a logical extent, it dilutes the tournaments and gameplay that is going on.
Because
you're sort of running it in parallel. The same thing with the golf tour. It was like, okay, well, like, is the PGA Tour the same? Is it as important if you have, like, a clone?
Exactly. Like, with the golf tour, people are basically being, what's the term?
Diverted,
pillaged.
Lured.
Yeah, lured, attempted away from the other golf tour that they have, the traditional one. But in this particular case with the Super League, there is certainly fear, well-founded fear, that the best players would all be put on Super League teams, meaning all the other teams, and we're talking dozens, hundreds of other teams, would not have anyone really worthy of note and wouldn't have the ability to ever get anyone worthy of note. Eventually, they just would become irrelevant. Now, this is something that maybe American owners of teams might prefer, or Saudi Arabian owners of teams, and that's something that is a reality in the British football leagues. In fact, when Ronaldo left Manchester United, I understand their American owners are desperately trying to sell the team now because they don't see value in it.
Well, and that's the thing where...
That's the difference between having a community run it and having, you know, investors from a foreign country run it.
Oh, totally, because the team or the club that he was an anchor for then, like, basically their whole business plan was the cachet of his name and his brand. From his perspective, he's not even alienating anyone. He's just broadening, and what we were talking about outside the discussion today on the radio was, it's just this thing of, oh, well, I'm already an icon. I'm already a fixture. All of my global audience will follow me wherever. All the people I care about.
How are you going to follow him to Saudi Arabia?
Right, but it's this attitude of, again, going against that sort of traditional club, older loyalties, and the sort of thing where, like, if someone changes teams, it's like it's a big deal, whereas this is sort of a global brand that he can infuse that into a club anywhere, and anybody who, you know, people who don't even have teams and clubs might just say, like, oh, well, I know Ronaldo because of endorsement deals and other avenues he's already established that visibility in, and that will somehow sell this new team or league in an area that ordinarily wouldn't have picked up on it organically.
Well, I hope he had a bad day today. We'll find out when we watch the game later. But I'm happy with what happened with Morocco. That was really pretty awesome. And for those of you just curious about this, this is what I suggest. This is how I got started, just following all the many teams and divisions and strategies that go into this, without even getting into the game, just how it all fits together. You pick a team, or just you pick the Premier League, which is the top league in British football, and get a listing of the teams, and every single one of those teams has a Wikipedia page. Read up on them. Look at the history. Look at how long they've been around. Look at how successful they've been, how long they've been in the Premier League, what other divisions they fell down to, and just keep going. Just keep looking into all the teams. It'll keep you busy for a few years because there's so many of them, but hopefully it'll also inspire you to either follow what's going on over there or help move towards something similar over here where it's not so much based on profit but based on tradition and community. Okay, I think we've talked enough about this one sport. Any closing thoughts on that before we get to something else?
Oh, no. Just shout out to Nunnington Griff.
Oh, yeah. That's the team we picked at random many years ago. I think they're in like the 15th division or something. You see, in addition, now you're going to get me started on this. In addition to the actual season, see, they play the entire season. I think they play 44 games. I don't know. They play every team twice in their division. So Premier League teams all play each other twice. And then at the end of the year, guess what? The team with the most points is the winner. they're the Premier League champion or whatever the second division is called, champion. And if they're the second division, they get brought up to the first division the next year. But in addition to that, they have what's known as the FA Cup, the Football Association Cup, which is played during the season as well. I think it's usually in the middle of the week. And that involves hundreds of teams. And some of them go far down. Some of them are just basically like, a garage, people who work on cars, but they have a football team. But they play against some other garage. And if they win, they move on to the next round where they play somebody a little bit better. Usually they lose. Maybe they don't. Theoretically, they could continue going on and wind up playing against Manchester United or some other team. Doesn't happen, but it's at least theoretically possible. And that's the FA Cup.
And it's kind of a celebration of how all of them are a part of the wider association of footballers.
So. Yeah, there's people in England I know that say, yeah, I played in the FA Cup once, you know.
Yeah, everybody's got that brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm. If you've played in the FA Cup, please write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear your experiences, even if it is only for a part of one game. Now, by the way, speaking of which, there was a player in Lake Grove who was part of the American World Cup team, which, by the way, got eliminated over the weekend to the Netherlands, put up a good fight, was rooting for them, but he never got to play. He was on the bench the whole time. You know, think about that. All the people don't get to play.
He was ready, though.
Whole family went over to Qatar, too, to see him, but they sat on the bench the whole time. I mean, still, it's an honor, but...
they were ready, too, just in case. It got wild, and he might get called up again. That is rough, though, to go, because how many opportunities do you get in a lifetime? Like, if you're a really good player, how many opportunities do you get to go? So you have a point.
Oh, he went. He just didn't play. He was there.
No, I mean, but to actually play. I'm saying, even if you played all the time, regular, okay, and throughout a career, however long you play, you could go to maybe 6 World Cups if all the teams you play for are great. I don't know. Whatever the number is, here he is on his first one and no chance to play. That's rough.
Yeah, it is sad. But that's what happens.
Better luck next time.
Yeah, and hopefully there'll be a next time. And certainly he'll be playing whatever team he plays with. I don't think it's MLS. I think it's maybe a European team, maybe a German team. I don't know. I didn't do my research on this.
Well, good on the programs out here in New York, and I'm sure there's other rising players that we'll also see from the area.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, turn on the games when they're on. They're interesting. You learn a lot. And as you can see, we talked about sports for over half an hour, and we're not sports people at all. Yeah.
Apologies. It was a mistake. I mean, men... Okay, I'm ready. We can change the subject.
Okay.
I'm done with sports.
There's an election tonight. In fact, it's only going on for another 24 minutes. 7 o'clock, I believe, is when the polls close in Georgia. And, well, here we are again. Raphael Warnock has to... You know, this poor guy. he has had to run four times in the last 2 years. I mean, he won three of the elections already. Can we just let him have it, for God's sake? You know, in the election in November 2022, he won then, okay? And because he didn't win 50% due to Georgia's rules, he had to participate in the runoff in January of 2017, January 5th, 2017. And it kind of got overshadowed on January 6th. But he won the runoff and became the senator. But because he was a replacement senator, he only got the term until 2022, or he had to run for re-election in 2022. And he did, and he won that one in November. But because it wasn't 50% again, he had to run in another runoff today. Fourth time in 2 years. So, sure hope this is it. And, you know, if you gave me a lot of money and told me, hey, Emmanuel, go out there and find the most incompetent, worst candidate you can discover, take all the time you need, spend all the money you have to, I could not have done better than Herschel Walker. I could not have done better. So kudos to whoever it is who found him. But my God, I mean, Republicans, are you trying to look bad? I mean, it's an A for effort. You definitely accomplished that. But the thing that gets me is that with many people, it doesn't seem to matter. It really doesn't seem to matter. You could, you know, pretty much put anybody up there and people will vote for them or it or whatever, as long as it's not a Democrat. You know, you could have some kind of monster from outer space. And, yeah, that's fine. Just make sure the Democrats don't get control. Well, first of all, Democrats already have control of the Senate. But 51 seats instead of 50 would make a huge difference because everything won't always have to go to Kamala Harris for a tiebreaker. Slows things down incredibly. And if Joe Manchin decides that something is too liberal for him, you don't need him. You know, it becomes a lot easier. Things move a lot faster. And certainly if we're looking at Supreme Court nominees, that makes a lot of difference. Judicial nominees of all sorts makes a very big difference. And to undo all the harm that was caused by the 4 years of Trump, this is needed. This is needed desperately. So it's not something to say, well, you know, they already have the majority. It doesn't matter as much. It matters. It really matters. And I think a lot of people get that based on the early returns so far, the people who have shown up. Incredible number of people broke all records. Of course, as heard on Democracy Now! Before this program, there was a real effort to keep people from voting by making a shorter period of early voting and just making it difficult for them overall. I hope people are basically standing up to that, not giving up. If you have to stand in line, I understand if you're in line at 7 o'clock, you have to vote. Or you have to be allowed to vote. We should have results, I think, tonight. You can't have somebody like Herschel Walker in power. Oh, my God.
I think a lot of people in Georgia feel that way. Like, I've listened to a lot of programming and personal perspectives, and it's just, it's unbearable. They're tired of it. They don't want to, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what the results look like. It's too close, though. That's the other aspect of this. It's like, with someone so bad, how is the race close? That's what a lot of people have been asking themselves, that Republicans and their supporters would really, in seriousness, put up a candidate like this and not be critical or find someone else before getting this far along. I mean, it's too much to bear, and hopefully a lot of support goes to Warnock, who's been put to the ballot many, many times recently. So
Really, he has. It's unbelievable.
And
he's proven himself. He's a good senator. He's somebody who does the job. He shows up. He's articulate.
Competent.
Yeah. And what, he argued with somebody over a parking space once? You know, they try to dig up all this dirt, but all you need is, you know, a paragraph from Herschel Walker, and he's left in the dust. Come on, this guy, you know, it's a hypocrite on abortion. He doesn't even live in the state, apparently. His primary residence is in Texas. And if you just watch a speech of his, it makes Donald Trump look like, you know, a Shakespearean actor compared to him. Just nonsense after nonsense. And just no appreciation for the actual job that he's applying for here. Well, we have this information. Before today, Georgia accepted about 175,000 absentee ballots. 1.7 million people had voted early in person, which is a total of 1.89 million, million ballots total. That's 27% of registered voters. Now, white voters had the highest number of votes among early voters, but black voters had slightly higher early voting turnout at 29.5%. Wait, I don't understand that sentence. White voters had the highest number of votes among early voters, but black voters had slightly higher early voting turnout at 29.5%. Okay, I guess we're talking about percentages, not total numbers.
So it's early voters, people mm-hmm. that generally vote early, and then the turnout itself.
Okay. About 10% of voters under 30 voted early, while 49.5% of registered voters 65 and above had already voted by Election Day. I'm not really sure what to make of all that. I just know that if a lot of people turn out, it's generally good for Democrats. That's usually how it plays out. So I'm not sure when we're going to actually get the results. Might be tonight. Might be in a day. Might be in 2 days. Yeah, it's nail biting. It really is. So polls close. If you're in Georgia, get your ass down to a polling station, your polling station, in the next 15 minutes. Otherwise, you miss out. And it's, you know, very few times I wish I was Georgian, but if I was, you know, a resident of that state, I would certainly be taking this responsibility very seriously, because you are deciding the future of the country. Think about this. Had Georgia not gone blue in 2020 and 2021, virtually nothing in the Senate would have been accomplished.
It's true.
Yeah, virtually not, because it was the slightest possible majority. It was 50-50 majority. You can't get any narrower than that. And everything would have been lost. Biden would not have accomplished a thing.
And speaking of accomplishing, I mean, this as a win would expedite a lot of some of the Democratic initiative that is in the works from this administration yet in the, you know, remaining 2 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because keep in mind, Biden had the House, and not having the Senate would have basically ensured that none of his bills would have ever made it to a vote. And what a tragedy that would have been. All right. Let's see. Trump has called for termination of the Constitution. You heard about that, huh? Extraordinary anti-democratic statement. This is from the New York Times. From former President Trump, suggesting the termination of the Constitution to overturn the 2020 election. That little remark drew a degree of bipartisan condemnation over the weekend, with a flood of from Democrats and a trickle from Republicans. Seriously, Republicans, it's not hard to condemn somebody who says to terminate the Constitution. It really isn't. You know, if somebody does that, no, that's not what we stand for, period. Yeah, inaccurately describing the contents of a just-released report about Twitter's moderation decisions during the 2020 campaign, and that was a fiasco as well. The reports that came out, supposedly bombshells, there was nothing there. There was absolutely nothing there. It's you know, as I remember it, there was a New York Post story that was basically alleging all this information from Hunter Biden's laptop had been revealed, and Twitter decided not to allow links to the New York Post story. Amongst many other people, I objected strongly to that. It was a bad move. It was a bad idea. It was eventually changed. And that's how it happened. And now they're revealing that this is what happened, even though we all know that's what happened, and trying to make it seem like somehow Biden was the one doing it when he wasn't. He's basically, you know, his people were basically pointing out certain offensive tweets or harmful tweets of one sort or another, calling for violence or just spreading personal information, just like anybody else would be doing the same thing. Trump did the same thing, you know, saying this tweet should be deleted. Nothing more than that. But the way they're trying to portray it, it's as if Biden somehow was running Twitter. That's not at all what was happening. So, inaccurately describing the contents of a just-released report about Twitter's moderation decisions during the 2020 campaign, Trump again demanded that the 2020 election be overturned or rerun, for the first time explicitly calling to set aside the supreme law of the land. These are his words. A massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. Now, he's since said that he's being misquoted. It's his quote. He typed it. It came from his account. So I don't even know how you try and defend yourself from that. This explicit suggestion of suspending the Constitution was astonishing, even by the standards of Mr. Trump, who has spent the past 2 years spreading lies about the 2020 election, which he lost, and promoting various illegal mechanisms for overturning it. And that's New York Times saying that. That's not, some person on the street saying that. These are facts. These are facts that are demonstrably true. And it's just kind of sad that so few Republicans are condemning what he said, what he's advocating. It just means that, you know, if he falls into favor again, they'll back up whatever he says. We've seen it before, and now we know. We know how easy it is for people to be swayed. I mean, I always was aware that was something that mankind has a history of. Just didn't think it would be so close to home.
Yeah, when given that permission to believe something so preposterous, and if the right people are laughing it off, you get sympathy in these places that it is misplaced, and it's fatal, I think. Really, you're making big mistakes. You gotta have good information.
Yeah, absolutely.
Believing people with bad info, I mean, come on. Hazardous to your health.
So, here's some good news. You like some good news as we sort of
I dabble in it.
Come close to the end of the program here.
Time to time, yeah.
All right. Basically, when we go into Finn's show, we like to go in on a positive note.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to take a little of that before.
People are in a much better mood listening to his show than our show.
Yeah, just like half a spoonful.
Mm-hmm.
And then Finn just soothing. It's amazing stuff.
That's why I listen.
Yep.
Yeah. I get all worked up talking, you know, and hearing myself. I need to relax and here's something that makes me feel like everything is going to work out.
No need, yeah.
Okay, so there's a recent change in New York State law. Get this. It means that patients with medical debt, y'all listening out there, I know there's a lot of people with medical debt, you'll no longer have your wages garnished or liens placed on your homes. These are practices that previously affected hundreds of New Yorkers a year. Hundreds. I would think it's a lot more than that. Governor Kathy Hochul signed the measure November 23rd, amending state law to ban health care providers from using those debt collection practices, which she called harmful and predatory. More than 50,000 New Yorkers, that's more like it, have faced lawsuits due to medical debt in the past 5 years. That's according to state officials. Health care systems that operate hospitals on Long Island filed hundreds of liens on patients' homes in 2017 and 2018. Before the law changed, a report by the Nonprofit Community Service Society of New York shows, the now banned collection practices were punitive to patients, many of whom are struggling to survive on low incomes. For a patient who, say, takes home $350 a week after taxes, a $50 wage garnishment, it could make a huge difference. If a healthcare provider wins a lawsuit to collect debt, it can obtain a judgment against the patient. Before the law changed, that judgment could have resulted in the patient's wages being garnished, allowing the provider to collect 10% of the patient's before-tax income, or it could have led to a lien being placed on the patient's home. So it's good to see that's no longer going to happen.
Absolutely. You got to protect patients. They're going through a lot. Dealing with billing, medical billing itself, I think, is it's a real evil in so many ways. Just to advocate for yourself is a full-time job. And I want to remind everyone that it is open enrollment period. So read up and find things that work for you as far as healthcare and get covered and get your loved ones covered.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of options out there.
It ends December 15th, I believe.
And yeah, I think it's mid-December, and that's going to keep you, that's going to get you all set for next year. And I implore people to do that and have that in place. Important to be healthy, and in the same way, the health providers, whatever kind of structure they have, they can't be going after people's houses. Come on, you got to play the long game. If they have a house, they can get like a couple like side hustles. They could like maybe they could deliver lab stuff for you. Maybe they have like some cool stuff they could do, like some crafts.
It's common decency, okay? You know, people going through health issues, they should not even have to worry about paying bills. Not just medical bills, any bills. They should be focused on their health, period. And they should be getting help for everything else. And, you know, to come after people and threaten them when they're going through the most difficult time of their lives, you know, what kind of people do that?
It's cruel.
Yeah.
It's so cruel. And we've only now, I think, got a baseline of health coverage nationwide, and it's was long fought for. So I don't know. Take advantage of what's out there, and let's improve it. Let's have a healthy populace. Whatever people are doing, however social or busy or not, or wherever they are in life, I think. A well-being and an efficient, fair system is deserved so that we can actually live our lives instead of being consumed with the sort of predatory billing and the kinds of things that make you like malpractice attorneys and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Hey, remember the 516 area code?
I've heard of it.
Used to be here. We used to have the 516 area code, then it was taken from us, and we became the 632 area code. No, I'm sorry, the 631 area code. See, I can't even get it right after all these years. We're 632 exchange, but 631 area code. Yeah, that's confusing. But 516 became Nassau County, and they got to keep it, and we wound up with 631. Well, they're getting a second one now because they're running out of numbers. There's only 20 exchanges left, apparently, in the 516 area code.
They didn't take care of it.
Well, they used it all up, in fact, including our old phone number.
Gave it out.
They have our old phone number over there in Nassau County. But now they're going to get a second area code in January. Do you know what that area code is?
It's the 739.
Not at all. No, it's 363.
Okay.
So they're going to get 363 as their second area code. And now, here's the thing. I'm looking through this massive news story about this. I don't know why this is so long. But we got a second area code here in Suffolk County not too long ago. And I don't know what it is. Do you know what it is? I don't think anybody here knows what that is. Does anybody know? No, nobody remembers it because, 363, I can remember that. That's kind of, easy on the ears. But our second area code is 934. And God forbid you try to dial that on a rotary phone. It takes forever. Because somehow we're using all these phone numbers. I don't know how we're using all the phone numbers when population hasn't really exploded that much. I guess everybody gets 50 phone numbers for all their devices. We now have all different area codes that don't really mean anything. And all this could have been saved. We could have kept our area codes had we simply added one digit to phone numbers, make 8-digit phone numbers instead of 7-digit phone numbers, but that's not the route we decided to go on.
Well, maybe if they stop selling them to telemarketers and phone spammers, we would have more available for actual humans.
Yeah. Well, that's going to start a whole other conversation that will go on for another hour, which we do not have. So we're going to close out by giving out our email address, otw@2600.com, and in support and celebration of the Moroccan football team, we say Viva Africa, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody. Have fun.
Congratulations to Morocco. I have to tell you, I live, this is Finn, by the way, I live not too far from an area in Astoria called Little Egypt, and there's a big Moroccan population there, and I have to tell you, it was exploding. And I don't really follow any of this stuff, to tell you the truth, unless I happen to be in a bar, which, of course, I never am. But if I happen to be in a bar, I see them waving the flags, and it was insane. And having been in Morocco myself, I was so happy to see all these smiling faces and celebrations on the street of Queens, New York. But, you know, I digress. I think our minds are on Georgia right now, but you're listening to WUSB, Stony Brook.